Cashman Friday, David Stearns Friday. Let's be honest. Listen, I know I've spent a lot of time on the Yankees today over the first 2 hours. Yesterday was almost, we yelled about the Yankees game a little bit and the rousing victory and the hair-pulling mistakes. But yesterday we spent a lot of time because those were the main moves were made for the New York Mets, acquiring Rogers and Helsley for the back end of the bullpen. They also added Soto, too, earlier in the week. So, I mean, three legitimate bullpen arms, another lefty from Soto. And then Cedric Mullins was the acquisition today. And Cedric Mullins, look, Luis Roberts and Cedric Mullins aren't that different of a player in my mind, other than Luis Roberts has a higher ceiling. And we just don't know what kind of player he is. I feel like we know what Mullins is. He's had a career with Baltimore. We know who he is. He had one great, tremendous year where he was one of the better center fielders in the game. And outside of that, he's been underachieving. He got out to a great start this year and has cooled off, but he is a ball player. He is a tough at bat. I can tell you this as a Yankee fan watching the Yankees play the Orioles forever. He is a tough at bat. He is a grinded out type player. He hustles. He works hard. He just made one of the great catches, I think, of the season, robbing a home run the other day. He's a great center fielder. It is an upgrade over Taylor, for sure. He's as good a defender as Taylor, and he's a better offensive player than Taylor. He's left-handed. He brings a lot to this group. There's no doubt about it. That is a good, solid move. Does it impact the offense in a major way? I don't know. But it solves the, like, you don't have to play guys who shouldn't be playing center field, you know, namely Jeff McNeil, out there anymore. And it's not the slam dunk. It's not someone who's going to come in here and get thrusted into the middle of the order, but it's a significant upgrade, and he is a really good player. Here's the problem with the New York Mets when it comes to the offense, and I've been talking about, like, you have to figure out a way to get Pete Alonso going. You have to figure out a way to get Francisco Lindor going. That's it. Like, that's the bottom line. Everything else, like, the offense isn't, there wasn't a bat out there, even Luis Robert. There wasn't a bat out there for the New York Mets at the center field position that's going to dramatically impact this offense. I just didn't believe it. I think Cedric Mullins is as good a name as there was out there and as good a name that was moved, really, as far as outfielders go. Kwan was not moved in out of Cleveland. Like, that never happened. So this was the move. And it's an upgrade, but ultimately that top of the lineup's got to be better. And then, hopefully, now that Vientos did not get moved, now that he's past that, hopefully that motivation that the trade deadline brought him is something that he can continue. As I'm watching the play from Mullins right now, that is a tremendous catch. I mean, he robs, I don't know who's up. Was Santander back from injury? Because that's who it looked like. No, it's not him, right? He wasn't. I was going to say, I don't think Santander is back, but that kind of looked like him. I'm not sure who that right-handed hitter was. But he robbed he's a very good player right now. You know, he's hitting, what, 214? He's got an OPS just over 600. He's, you know, or seven. Oh, no, he's got a 730. That's, I guess, as a center fielder. I don't know. Oh, the average for the Mets. I got you. Mullins has got a 700 and something OPS. He's hitting 229, 15 home runs. He is an upgrade. There is no doubt about it. And it's a good, solid move. But what they did in the bullpen, being aggressive, is where the Mets really improved themselves. And they needed it because they're starting pitching, while talented. I was just talking with Zoom. Like, I do like the Mets rotation. I don't know how you can argue. They've done a really nice job. And, you know, Clay Holmes could be a name going back to the bullpen. But you're looking for that, you know, fourth starter. I don't know who it is. But the top three are talented, and I expect them to keep the Mets in every game, in any situation against any offense. Like, in a postseason series, against anybody, I would expect Kodai Senga to be pitching in the fifth inning, sixth inning, up or down one run, like, or giving up one or two runs. Like, that should be a nightly basis. That's how talented he is. Same thing with Manaea. Like, they are guys who are going to keep this team in games, in the postseason, against the best lineups in baseball. I have no doubt. They don't, as of right now, shown any sort of track record that they can get deep into the game. So that's why the bullpen's so important. And they've kind of reshaped it at the back end with legitimately good guys in Helsley and Rogers. So a positive trade deadline for both. We did a lot of that yesterday from the Yankees. Cedric Mullins is an upgrade, not a superstar, not someone that really makes you think, you know, the who knows? Maybe he gets excited, thrust it into a playoff race out in New York. You know, he's been toiling away all these years in Baltimore. They've had some good teams over the last 2 years and have been a playoff team over the last 2 years. But right now, it's been a dead season for them. Let's see if he can impact the back end of this lineup and obviously play defense in center field and just give them another option. So, upgrade, not an enormous star, but they did yeoman's work out in the bullpen because the addition of Soto and then followed by the other day Rogers and Helsley, those are two legitimate back end of the bullpen arms. Those are two really good arms. You had that with Brooks Raley coming back, Reed Garrett, Stanek, and of course Diaz, who's still the closer of this team. That's right. I mean, unfortunately, the San Diego Padres added Mason Miller, so they clearly have the best bullpen in the sport, let alone the National League. But the Mets are right there with one of the best bullpens in baseball now. And that's attacking a need and making it a strength. And I thought David Stearns had a really good trade deadline. 888-808-1019. But Brian Cashman has been a little bit more in the forefront today because of all the acquisitions he did himself at the back end of the bullpen. And you look at how deep and how many different guys, they impacted the bench, they impacted the bullpen. The only thing you can quibble with is the starting rotation. And it's fair because there are two starting pitchers right now that you know for a fact are good enough to start in the postseason series. That's it. Outside of that, you just don't know. Let's get to Tommy in Astoria. What's up, Tommy?
Hey, Chris. Good night, man. Good night for the Mets fans.
Absolutely.
For a little while, I don't have to hear about Dumpster Diver Dave and all this ridiculous nonsense that I was hearing from people, small market Dave. I love the Mullins deal. You know that Tyrone Taylor in the last 30 days had an OPS under 300?
Yeah.
I've never seen anything like it. It was bad. This is a huge pickup. I like the guy Rogers is as good as a setup guy. In you know, there is in baseball. And, you know, we'll see what happens with Helsley. I mean, it's a little tricky thing is sometimes when you take these closers and you make them set up guys, they have a little bit of adjustment because they're warming up at different times, you know, they're coming in with guys on base. But we'll see. I mean, I think it's going to, all three divisions in the National League are going to be tough. They're going to be tough races. Quick question. MLB, they were going crazy about the Correa deal. Am I missing something? I'm seeing a guy with 7 home runs and a 700 OPS. Like, why would he go with so gaga over?
It's funny you said that. Yeah, I just saw a clip where.
Are you nuts?
Yeah, I just saw a clip where Reynolds on the MLB Network, Harold Reynolds of the MLB Network, just said that. When they were talking about who the winners and losers of the trade deadline, said that trade flipped the trade deadline on its head. And I was like, why? Why would that trade flip the trade deadline on its
I'm
head?
I'm glad you agree with me. Maybe I'm missing
something. No, of course not. Let me get into that now, actually, and give you my Yankee shill take. But, let's look at because we're going full Yankee shill today. It just seems like a good day to do it. He is right now this season. He's also had some injuries, and the ankle got banged up. He actually didn't miss much time. There was fear he was going to miss a lot of time, but he's played 93 games. He's hitting .267. He's got an OPS of .704, which is below average, and an OPS plus of .92. He is a below average offensive player who's a very talented defensive player, but has an ankle that could go at any moment. He's now 30 years old. Like, the only thing that you would say is that he is a proven winner. That's it.
Yeah.
The argument is he's been there in the postseason. He's won a championship. He's been a clutch hitter in the postseason. He is a gamer, and he was part of that organization when they were, you know, winning championships and getting to 6 or 7 straight ALCSs. So that's the argument. The argument is he's a gamer. And when he gets there, he'll perform. Now, he is not nearly the player he was back when in Houston. That's just, I mean, you know, 2016, 8-11, like from when he came up in 2015, he played 99 games. So that's fair enough. OPS 857, next year 811, 941, 728, 926, 850, 834. Even last year for Minnesota, 905 in only 86 games. He's got an OPS of 704. He's 30 years old with a bum ankle. He's hitting 267. He's slugging 386. He's got 7 home runs and 31 RBIs in 93 games. Like, that's the player that shook up the trade deadline? I like Harold Reynolds, and I understand Correa as a name, and that at any moment he can get back to that player. I mean, it was only last year he had a 900 OPS in 86 games. So, like, would I be surprised if he goes back home to Houston and starts playing better than he's played for the Minnesota Twins this year? No, of course not. Of course I wouldn't be that surprised. But it's not like he is the player he was when he left or the player he was in his prime. He just hasn't been that player. And let me just say this, because I know I'm the odd Yankee fan. I want to win a championship more than anything else, without question. I don't, ultimately, do I care what the path is or who it is? No, I don't. But I've got to tell you something. As a Yankee fan, growing up in the 90s, right? I'm a 90s Yankee fan, the typical spoiled 90s Yankee fan. Although I feel like I comport myself differently than a lot of the Yankee fans who grew up in the 90s and despise everything about them now because they're not that 90s team. And I feel like that's ridiculous. But during those years, the Angels gave them some problems. I remember the Angels for a time were the only team in Major League Baseball that had a over 500 winning percentage against Joe Torre's Yankees. They consistently, Mike Socha and that team consistently gave the Yankees headaches. Why? I don't know, because they played hard, put the ball in play, put pressure on the defense. The same stuff you hear that hurts the Yankees now, because that's what hurts teams in baseball. But never mind, that's for a different day. Actually, no, it's for today. I'm Yankee Shill talking. Even the great Yankee teams, you put pressure on them, you make things difficult, you put the ball in play, it makes it harder for the Yankees. That's what the Angels and Mike Socha did to them, which guys like Shone Figgins, who kicked the crap out of them, and those great Angels teams of the early 2000s. And they beat him in 02, they beat him in 05, the Yankees got their revenge in 09. Nobody. The Tigers have won a bunch of series, we're yet to get revenge on that, right? The Tigers beat them in 05, the Tigers beat them in 11 and 12. Verlander, obviously then the Astros, but even the Tigers have beaten the crap out of the Yankees in postseason series. Waiting for that revenge, but that's long gone. There is no team in my lifetime as a New York Yankee fan who has kicked the crap out of and blocked and won it every single time and prevented the Yankees from winning a championship more than the Houston Astros. They are the absolute nemesis, right? The Boston Red Sox are always the biggest rival, but the nemesis right now, the team they can't get past, the team that owns them, is the Houston Astros dating back to 2015. It has been a decade long beating the head up against the Astros wall. And the Astros right now feel different, right? It's Altuve is still there, but even Tucker's gone. Alvarez is banged up. Springer's in the division having a great resurgence series with a season with Toronto. Like it's Verlander's with the Giants, hardly hanging on to his career. It's just different, and it'll never be the same again. But I got to tell you, a part of me still wants a shot at revenge against that Astros team, and if Correa is back, it'll feel like that a little bit more. And I know that's petty and stupid, and I'm asking for trouble at the idea of wanting to take on the Houston Astros and getting that revenge, because it still might be the same old story. They have really good pitching. They've done a nice job. They've lost some guys to injury here, but they've done a really nice job. They've taken control of that division. They're a dangerous team who knows how to win, and Altuve is still a good player. But I got to tell you, I am thrilled that Carlos Correa is back in Houston, and I want them, and I want them bad. And yeah, maybe I'm a little gung-ho of a positive trade deadline and a three-game winning streak. Maybe I am. Maybe I'm in my feels a little bit too much about a team that has played sloppy baseball, mistake-ridden baseball, and overly bad baseball for the last 2 months. I get it. That has not changed today. That hasn't changed with the last three wins. They're going to have to go out and change that over the next 50-some-odd games that they have left. But I'll tell you this. I hate the Houston Astros. And the idea that Correa is back with them, and if we got into a postseason series with them, it would feel a little bit like it's the same Astros team. I want that bad. I want to beat them. Because if I beat them when they're not the same team, it'll be positive. It'll feel good. It'll be some sort of revenge. And that's why I wanted them to continue winning. I didn't want other teams to beat them in the last couple postseasons. Because I'm like, I don't want them to not be the Astros anymore. I don't want them to fall at the wayside, not be the same team. They've lost Bregman, who's now with Boston. They've lost, obviously, a bunch of different guys. Now they're getting back Carlos Correa. But they lost Tucker. They lost Correa. They lost Springer. They lost Bregman. It's just they've lost Verlander. It just doesn't feel like the same team. And the idea they got one of their guys back, one of those sons of you-know-what, who cheated everyone, including the Yankees and the Dodgers in 2017. Who knows what went on in 2019. I was there, the wild card, 2015, as Keuchel just completely shut down the Yankees. And I left that building and saw like six or seven dopes in Astros uniforms waving us goodbye as I was exiting that building that night. The idea that Carlos Correa is back, one, he's not the same player, but just his face and his presence in that lineup, if the Yankees are lucky enough to take on the Houston Astros in the playoffs this year, I want that revenge. I want to beat them and have that feeling like, okay, we'll never be even. They'll never be even. They have done too much and kicked the Yankees' ass too many times. They'll never be even, but I need them to feel what I have felt just once. Just once. I want Carlos Correa's season to end at the hands of the New York Yankees. Just once. I want Jose Altuve. I don't have to scream F. Altuve when I go to Yankee Stadium. I just want him walking off the field knowing it's at the Yankees' expense just once. Just once. So I'm hoping that Verlander gets released and gets picked up by the Astros. Bring him back, baby. Bring him back. Because I'm not finished with them. 888-808-1019. Let's go to Ralph in New Haven. What's up, Ralph?
Hi, that's Ralph in New Haven. Question about the Phillies picked up Bader. I heard he played for the Yankees. I don't know much about him. And they got the kid Durant from Minnesota, too. I don't follow the American League that much, but Bader supposedly has a lot of postseason experience. He's having a pretty good year. Do you know much about him? I don't know.
Yeah, about Bader?
He's a good outfielder. Yeah, about Bader.
Yeah, I mean, Harrison Bader?
Yeah.
Yes, Harrison Bader has been an excellent defensive center fielder, an excellent defensive outfielder for a long time. He's had ups and downs offensively as a hitter. He's not been a proven hitter at the major league level, or at least a real solid one. He's been an average hitter, a little bit less than that. And then
he's having a pretty good year.
He's having a pretty good year. He's having one of the best offensive seasons of his career, actually. And with the New York Yankees, excuse me?
They said he could play all three outfields.
Yes, there's no doubt. He's talented enough to play all three outfield positions, and he's an excellent, excellent defender. I have never seen an outfielder round the baseball the way he's able to run sideways to get into position. I've never seen anything like it. It's one of the more unique. He's an excellent defensive outfielder. And for his career, he's got a 7.06 OPS, so I mean that's below average. A 94, a 94 OPS plus, so he's just a below average hitter. This year, he's got a 7.78 OPS. He's slugging well above his his career average. He's having a nice little season: 12 home runs, 38 RBIs. He's played in 96 games, so he's having his best offensive season that he's had almost in his entire career. Pretty much his entire career. He was clutch for the New York Yankees in the postseason. He was their best postseason hitter in 2022.
That's what they said. He has a lot of postseason experience. I heard the name. I just don't remember him that well.
Listen, he, again, in 2022 for the New York Yankees, I'm on his page. Let's go back to the playoffs. For the New York Yankees in 2022, he was their best hitter. He hit in the series against Cleveland. He had three home runs and four RBIs, hit 267 with a 1.2 OPS. And then against Houston, he was literally the only guy who hit. Against the Astros, he had six hits, two home runs, two RBIs, hit 400, and had another 1.2 OPS. So in the two series for the New York Yankees, he had a 1.2 OPS. And he was their best hitter by a mile in the ALCS that they got swept by the Astros. His other postseason numbers are not as good. Other than, you know, he had a 750 OPS he walked once in the wild card game in 17. That doesn't even count. In 21, he walked in the wild card game for a 750 OPS because it's 750 batting on base percentage. And since then, yeah, not all that good. He was with the Mets last year, obviously. He did not get an at bat in the wild card round, and he got one hit and six at bats and two walks for the Mets in the NLDS against Philadelphia, and then had three at bats in the NLCS. So he's got postseason experience, but really the only postseason success he's had was with the Yankees in 22, and he was fantastic for the Yankees. Absolutely brilliant. If Aaron Judge hit like Harrison Bader, maybe that's not a sweep. In fact, I know it's not a sweep. Maybe the Yankees win that series. 888-808-1019. Quick break. McMonagle here with you on the Fan. We'll get to some other things. We've talked about the trade deadline enough. I'll still take your calls on it, obviously, and that's the main theme of the show. We'll get back to it. But maybe a little bit of football, as there was an announcement of a trade demand that directly impacts the New York Giants. 888-808-1019. Come back. Continue to take your phone calls right here on the Fan. As my kids are now obsessed with Adam Sandler movies, as I try and let them watch a little bit, we let them watch some. We try and fast forward through some scenes, but we do our best.
You got to let them watch That's My Boy next.
Yeah, I don't think That's My Boy is the next one. But we watched a little bit of Billy Madison, Happy Gilmore 2. And now they've watched a little bit of... what's the movies with him and all the buddies?
Oh, Grown-Ups.
Grown-Ups. Right, yeah. So they've watched Grown-Ups a little bit. And speaking of movies, and I wasn't going to do this right here, but now because Mick Foley and Kevin James came up, it's unbelievable. Have you seen the reviews for Naked Gun 2? Oh, I shouldn't say. The remake of Naked Gun with Liam Neeson?
Well, it is a sequel in a way, I think, right?
It's a remake.
Well, no, it's not a remake because it's his dad.
It is a sequel, correct, yeah. So, I mean, but it's not, there was two and then two and a half and then 33 and a third. And so, I don't know what.
I have not seen the reviews, though, no.
They are amazing.
Really?
The reviews are so ultra positive that the movie's hilarious. Like, it's making me nervous because my expectations now are through the roof. I've been looking forward to it. I don't like that. I don't like to have high expectations, especially for a slapstick comedy. When's the last time anyone's done anything like that successfully in today's day and age and world? Like, it just feels like, I feel like Naked Gun is a hard thing to make right now.
Well, also, like, how often do you go into these movies with high expectations?
Yeah, I mean, very rarely.
And
that's what I'm saying. Like, so to go into this thinking it's going to be the funniest movie, I mean,
it can only disappoint, I feel.
Yeah,
like.
That's what I'm saying. I'm disappointed. Like, I was excited for, obviously, Happy Gilmore 2. I'm excited for this. And then they announced another Spaceballs coming. Like, those are the three that, like, I've been like, wow. And then when there was Liam Neeson in Naked Gun, I was like, man, this is going to be interesting. Liam Neeson? Like, I just, that weird. But apparently, it's hilarious. I'm nervous. I'm excited and I'm nervous because I don't want to ruin it with expectations of it being funny. I want to go into it with the same expectations I had of Happy Gilmore 2, that it's a straight to Netflix movie, that it's a I figured he was going to lean into all the old things with the movie, and it did even more than I thought. Like, they really leaned heavy into Happy Gilmore and a lot of old references to the movie, and like, and I knew what it was going to be. It was exactly what I thought it was going to be. And I loved it. It's not hilarious. It's not the greatest thing ever, but it's exactly what I thought it was going to be. And it was extremely just watchable. It was extremely sit back, enjoy the next hour and 40 minutes, whatever it was. And like it was everything I wanted Happy Gilmore 2 to be and expected. I didn't expect to think it was going to be the greatest, funniest thing I've ever seen. But like now, the reviews for this Naked Gun movie are that the jokes keep on a-coming. Everybody needs to watch it. It's the best comedy to hit the movie theater in years. Like, it is, it's getting crazy reviews.
Yeah, that's scary for me, bro, because I went into Happy Gilmore 2 with the expectations that it was going to be one of the worst movies I've ever seen, and because of that, I feel like it really was great.
I want to go into the expectations with a movie without major expectations, or, you know, I don't know, but we'll see. But, you know, now we know that him and Pamela have formed a relationship out of this movie.
Oh, they're here.
Liam Neeson and Pamela Anderson. That, I mean, could you have imagined more of a different, like, she's doing Baywatch and he's doing Schindler's List. And
she's
like,
married to Tommy Lee.
Yeah, she's married to Tommy Lee, right, exactly. They're just a different, worlds apart, you would have put them. And
he's about to be Qui-Gon Jinn.
He is?
No, that was in the Star Wars movie.
Oh, okay, yeah. Is that was his name in the Phantom Menace?
Yes, it was.
Okay.
Are you, you're not a Star Wars fan, I think.
No, I'm not a Star Wars. It's not that I dislike Star Wars movies, and I've seen them all. I don't know that his name was Qui-Gon Jinn. That I don't know.
And
what's his name? Let's be totally honest.
Obi-Wan?
Well, no.
Anakin?
Yeah, he was terrible.
The little kid?
In 2 and 3, Hayden Christensen.
Hayden Christensen,
Him and Natalie Portman's love story was pretty awkward and bad.
I mean, Natalie Portman, too. You look at the career she had?
Yeah, I love Natalie Portman.
He really must have been, you know?
Yeah.
Mess that up with Natalie Portman?
Yeah, well, I mean, she's gone on to still be successful.
Look at how great of an actress she is.
Oh, I thought you were saying, like, he ruined her career. No. Yeah, no, she's...
To bomb those scenes with her?
Yeah, it's true. No, it's true.
Like, you know, she was carrying her weight.
No doubt. And I like Natalie Portman.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Black Swan,
but then the other one, too. With, like, her, Julia Roberts, Clive Owen.
Oh, Closer.
Closer. She plays a stripper in Closer?
Oh, yeah.
Not a bad scene with Natalie Portman as a stripper. All right.
Hey, you stumble upon Cinemax at like 10 years old?
Yeah, well, I don't know about 10. I'm a little older than you. Yeah, I was in my 20s probably when that movie came out. But yeah.
I was probably 9 or 10.
Really?
Maybe. That was a great
but
time.
But no, yeah. You don't know Skinamax the way I know Skinamax. I don't know if you... Do you remember those movies like Scorned? And, like, those late-night Max movies, they don't make them
My
anymore.
Man, I know who Evan Stone is.
They don't make them. Well, Evan Stone was a little legitimate, you know. I know you know who Evan Stone is, but that's different. No, like, what was the name of the actress in Scorned? She was married to Gene Simmons. What's Gene Simmons' wife's name?
Gene Simmons' wife?
No, Shannon Tweed. Shannon Tweed was in all these, like, late-night Max movies back when, you know, they had their own channel. Now it's HBO Max, whatever, but Max had all of those Shannon Tweed and Scorned was like the name of the movie. All those movies. And then Pamela Anderson, we were just talking about Pam. She had some of them, right? There was her and Parkman from Major League 2. You know Parkman from Major League 2?
Wait, what?
Parkman does the shuffle, makes the ladies here in Cleveland sick. Yeah, him and her had a movie together. That was a Skinamax late night movie. Yep.
Jack Parkman,
the actor who played Jack Parkman. Look, let me see. I'll tell you right now. The actor who played Jack Parkman and Pamela Anderson had a Skinamax movie that you know, that he was the lead, she was in. It was before like Barbed Wire when she started doing you know, more regular movies. Let me find this guy.
Now, let me ask you a question while you look that up really quick.
David Keith. Let me find David Keith's career. Go ahead.
So, I was just thinking about this. It popped in my head. Now that we got HBO Max,
mm-hmm.
and we have almost everything from the HBO library in there, do we have all of this available?
You know, I don't know. I don't know. Again, they weren't made for Max movies necessarily. I don't know if they were, but it was like, those are the movies they showed.
If not, though... right. HBO. You get if you got that up there, I guarantee you that subscriber rate.
One of the first, and here's another one. This when I was a kid, I don't know about 10 or whatever, but here's another TV show. Do you remember Dream On? Dream On was one of the first HBO shows, and it was about this guy. I don't know if he was a writer or he was something, but he was like a womanizer. It was almost like Coach. It was like an X-rated HBO version of Coach with Leslie Nil, what's his name?
Yeah. Oh.
What was his name?
He was in that other show, too.
He's been in a million things. Yeah. But Quentin, I don't know if he had his name. Quentin Nelson? No, that's a offensive lineman.
Judd?
No. Doesn't matter. Coach was like that. He had an attractive ex-wife, and then he had a bunch of different girlfriends. And obviously, 2.5 Men was like that as well. Where
Craig T.
Nelson. He like on Coach. He was like it was like a Coach, but X-rated HBO. And he was like, it was Dream On, and he was like this little guy, and his ex-wife was always bothering him, and he was like sleeping with everybody in his life. He would meet someone he was sleeping with his assistant at work. He was sleeping with his boss. He was sleeping with the woman who ran the newspaper stand. He was sleeping with this one. It was like an original HBO show. And the only reason I bring it up is because you can't find it on Max. I was curious. That was like the original before Sex and the City, before all those things. I remember Dream on HBO, and I don't think it's in the HBO category, like in those where you can't search back and get it.
Well, there was another classic show just kind of like that when I was a little younger with Thomas Hayden Church, I think is his name.
Yeah, that was like on Showtime or something. Right?
No, it was on HBO.
Oh, what was it called?
Was Hung? His name Thomas Hayden Church?
Yeah.
Thomas Jane.
Yeah.
The guy that played Mickey Mantle in 61.
Yes. That was called Hung, right? Was the name of that show?
Yes.
Raw Justice, 1994. Raw Justice with Keith Jackson and Pamela Anderson. David Keith. I'm sorry, not Keith Jackson. David Keith. David Keith and Pamela Anderson. Raw Justice. Kill
Keith Jackson?
Yeah, I know. I knew it was something Keith. And then I saw, David Keith.
How do you think Keith Jackson would be in that?
I don't know. Not as good as David Keith. Maybe I just had baseball players on the brain because he was, again, in Major League 2. But yeah, David Keith, Pamela Anderson, Robert Hayes, Raw Justice, Kill or Be Killed. But go back and watch that. Pamela Anderson. Trust me. That was like one of those late night movies with she had another one too, but that was the one I remember the most, Raw Justice.
And at one point in time, Happy Gilmore 2 would have been a late night movie too.
Well, I mean, I guess not the same kind of late night movie. Not the one where you pretend you're sick and sleep in the living room and use the you gotta tell your mom, no, can I sleep next to the bathroom? My stomach's hurting me. Can I stay in the living room instead of going downstairs? Okay, all right. Oh, I got the cable box. Well, Cinemax. 1 o'clock in the morning. What are you doing in there? I'm watching Speed. Keanu Reeves. You ever see it? It's exhilarating.
Lake Placid.
No. Nothing placid going on. 888-808-1019. Well, you walked into that one. You... 88. Let's just take a break, and then we'll figure it out. I was going to do something sports related. This is taking a turn. Anyway, it started with Naked Gun. It sounds like it's going to be good. 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you on the Fan. Quick break. We'll come back. Talk a little football. Talk a little baseball, obviously. And the Knicks and Bridges come to a contract extension. It is not the max keeping them under that second apron. Big move for the Knicks. And a giant opponent that could be going in the wrong direction. 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you on the Fan. We'll get back to I'm looking up the TV shows. That's funny. Martin Tupper is a recently divorced book editor in Manhattan. Martin's life is filled with fantasies and sexual thoughts, many times coming in the form of black and white shots from old TV shows and films. That's the Dream On synopsis. I don't know why I haven't thought of that show in forever. But it was funny. It's funny. I probably shouldn't have been watching it. It was out in 1996. So I was when it went off air, I was 12 years old.
It was off air in 96?
Yeah.
That wasn't even a year.
Yeah, no, 1996. So I was like, depending on when, December of 96, I turned 13. So I'm 12, 99% of.
In December of 96, I turned 1.
Oh, there you go.
Look at us.
What's your birthday? December what?
6th.
No, December 19th.
Look at us.
Look at us. December birthdays.
And we can have a birthday party right in the middle.
Right in the middle of what?
In between our birthdays.
Oh, it's almost 2 weeks apart. Yeah, I guess, yeah.
Just about.
Yeah, the 12th. You want to get together on the 10th or the 11th?
The 11th is perfect.
Perfect. I'm in. 888-808-1019. Sonny in Montclair wants to talk TV shows. We'll do a little bit of calls here to lead into the top. And we'll get to the Washington Commanders, New York Giants, and other things, New York Knicks, as well as obviously still the trade deadline as we take it till 6 o'clock, 5 o'clock, and the warm-up show. Sonny in Montclair. What's up, Sonny?
Hey, I'm a big Yankees fan, but the reason why you got me to call was you mentioned Dream On. It made me laugh. I was like half sleeping.
Yeah.
But your hormones must have been raging because you know what? It was actually an excellent, clever show because he didn't cheat on his wife. They were all fantasies because he was a jilted book editor.
Yeah.
He said he used to sleep around.
He was divorced. I never suggested he was cheating on his wife. From my memory, he was sleeping.
They weren't real.
They
weren't real, but they incorporated all these things. But they would have these funny episodes where he'd be sitting with his wife originally or something. He'd be watching. He was watching a late night porn show once, and it turned out it was like the bougie high school or the grade school key school that they wanted to get their kid into was also part porn star, and the wife wasn't outraged by that. She was like, "Why are you watching the porn?" And there was always these different, like you said, black and white references to classic movies and everything. But it was well,
yeah. No, I remember it being funny, not just shows. Yeah.
It was great. No, you were wrong. Great. It was really. It was one of those cool '90s shows back then, but it was a pioneer for other stuff that went on. But I was calling really about the Yankees.
Yeah.
What I liked about the trades was Cashman actually. And I always criticize Cashman, so I'm being honest about this. But he put the Yankees in a position to play small ball too, with the different, on the margins. Additions. Now, we're always complaining they don't manufacture runs. Besides, I thought the McMahon acquisition was great defensively, much better than Suarez. Now you've got the lockdown pitching, and now you've got the guy who could steal the base late, the guy who can, drive in a run from the right side, left side. I think that's why you can't really jump the gun. I know there were guys on the station saying, sell. They're the Yankees. They're never going to sell. They're going to come at you. And I just hope they could play crisper. You think they could play crisper baseball?
Yes. Chris? I mean, I do. They haven't. The first 70 games of the year, they did. Like, they weren't this. Like, this has come with the losing. Like, early on in the year, before that Red Sox series in Boston, the Yankees weren't that same team. They were better defensively. And then something just went wrong, and they've had a trouble, like, getting it back together. But, yes, I still think they're capable. Because as much as we get mad at Boone for not calling things out, like, I do think they have good defensive players. Grisham's a good defensive player. Bellinger's a good defensive player. McMahon now is a good defensive player. Jazz at second is a good defensive player. Paul Goldschmidt is a good defensive player at first. Wells, framing, blocking balls, is a good defensive catcher. I mean, really, there's Dominguez in left, who did make a great catch to save the game the other night. And unfortunately, a guy who was a Gold Glover and is now awful at short, and that's Anthony Volpe. So you've got two spots at short and left where you're not good defensively. But other than that, like when they play Ben Rice, he's not great at first. But other than that, they're pretty good out there. They have the talent to be a much cleaner, crisper baseball team. They've got to go prove it. But I definitely think that they can tighten things up and be much cleaner. I really do. Phil in Sheepshead Bay. What's up, Phil?
I was on before I fell asleep, so I'm back.
Okay.
Anyway, I wanted to speak about Brian Cashman.
Yes.
I always had it in for the guy, but he came through. The cavalry is here, and the people like Hamilton and Loaiza who are failing, he has replacements. I don't know how he's going to use them, but it ought to be a better situation for them.
Yeah, no doubt.
And my second point is with the Mets, I like the fact that Cedric Mullins, I think when at Baltimore, he was hitting eighth or ninth. And maybe if he did hit ninth, he's a stronger guy because he has speed. And a couple infield hits, whatever, set the table for the top four guys. And I think that was a good move also. So have a good evening, and thank you for listening to me. Good night now. Bye.
You got it. Thank you very much. I agree. And I think a lot of people owe Cashman some level of an apology. And me an apology. No, I'm just kidding. You don't have to apologize for everything. Again, he's been here for a long time. They haven't won a championship since 09. I don't think you should hate Brian Cashman. I don't think you should think he sucks at his job. I don't think that that's warranted. I don't think he sucks at his job, and I don't think there should be, like, vitriol. But if you believe that it's been long enough without a championship and he's been here for 25 years or more than that, and he doesn't deserve to just be, you know, king forever, I think that's a fair take. I really do. I have no problem, even as a Cashman shill and Cashman defender, the idea that it's just time to move on is a reasonable take. He's been here forever, and they haven't won since 09. But the apologies do come with the idea, oh, he's asleep at the wheel. Oh, where is he? Like, you guys didn't want to wait. Cashman was out there playing chess, not checkers. And, again, I haven't really had one call. You want to call me up? A couple tweets, but I haven't had one call, 888-808-1019. Call me up and tell me that Brian Cashman did not have a good trade deadline. Like, I don't know how you could see it, how he didn't have a good trade deadline. Again, they got to go out and win. And yes, he hasn't won since 09, and it's been a long time. And I'm okay with the idea that it's been long enough. I am, even though I love him. Even though I shouldn't say I love him. I'm playing into the role. I like Brian Cashman. I think he's done a really good job for the most part. But it's reasonable to want something new. It's reasonable to think the era has come to an end. But the vitriol and the hate you guys have for him is ridiculous. And now, looking at this deadline, I don't know how you could say he didn't drastically improve the team. Let's go to Mike in Manhattan. What's up, Mike?
No, Eddie from Rockland, man.
Oh, what's up, Eddie?
Wrong again.
Well, I mean, nobody got it wrong. You gave him the Mike in Manhattan name, so no one's wrong.
No, I did not give Eddie in Rockland, brother.
Sure, you did.
That's a lie, but you can go on.
That's okay. You don't have to. We all know you wouldn't put down a wrong name. Good. So what do you got? Eddie, you there? Nope. Okay. 888-808-1019. Quick break now. We're up against the top.